Bitcoin is ripe for a massive disruption of systems like SWIFT, and at the rate the world is becoming both politically and economically unstable, I think that time is going to come sooner rather than later. The best in Bitcoin made audible. I am Guy Swan, and this is Bitcoin Audible. What is up, guys? Welcome back to Bitcoin Audible. I am Guy Swan, the guy who has read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know, and we have got a great read today from the ever-fruitful Bitcoin Magazine. Another one from Shinobi, actually, or Brian Trolls, as you know him on Twitter, who gets into a really great little argument here on how we might be, specifically because of the Lightning Network, we might be distracted from the highest value case that Bitcoin can provide at this very moment in time. With Lightning, we've kind of had this sudden focus on the retail, consumer, everyday payments, and we are missing a giant multi-trillion dollar liquidity bridge that could actually get us to that vision more easily and happens to have an immediate need that can provide exactly the kind of incredible neutrality and international settlement that Bitcoin can provide right now. So, without further ado, let's go ahead and get into it. Really quick, I want to thank our amazing sponsors. We have the Fold Card and the Fold app, which I'm very pleased with today because all my bills came in for the month and I got a boatload of sats back. Imagine, guys, being happy that your bills hit. Link in the show notes for all of you sad suckers who don't have it yet, plus a 20% discount. Don't miss that. Then CoinKite, the makers. CoinKite makes an entire suite of amazing Bitcoin hardware products. The signing devices, novelty products, like it's just amazing. The cold card, open dimes, tap signers, the block clock. Check it all out at guyswan.com/coldcard, and you get a discount code for them as well. And lastly, if you want to get some Bitcoin, there's no better place than just go to Swan Bitcoin. Simple automatic savings plan, done. Automatically buy and automatically send to your cold storage, done. Or you want the concierge service, you want a phenomenal educational resource, all Signal, and access to the best team of Bitcoiners to answer questions, and the Pacific Bitcoin Conference that they're throwing in November, code GUYS gets you 20% off of that. GUYS, G-U-I-S. Do not forget, get your tickets now. Links and everything in the show notes. With that, let's get into today's read. And it's titled, Bitcoin Will Replace SWIFT Before It Replaces Visa, by Shinobi. Bitcoin is a perfect fit as a means of exchange for entities who would traditionally make up the majority of transactions on SWIFT. Published September 21st, 2022. With the advent of the Lightning Network, the notion of Bitcoin as a means of exchange has been taking off in the last few years in terms of dominant narratives in this space again. Ultimately, that is a necessary component of something that is aiming to become money. Storing value is meaningless in the context of money without the ability to easily exchange it. And Lightning is the most promising tool at this point in order to truly scale the ability to do that. Conceptually, though, the majority of the focus of means of exchange as a functionality has been around consumers, fulfilling the needs of your average person and their day-to-day needs in purchasing groceries, shopping online, paying for services, etc. This is not the only scale of exchange in an economy. Businesses pay suppliers. They have to pay for contractors or services as well. International shipping companies need to receive money from all over the world from their customers, most of which are not consumers, but businesses. Imports flow all over the world at massive scale and need to deal with the complexity of foreign currency exchanges between many different national currencies. Medium of exchange does not just mean people paying for their coffee. The entire function of medium of exchange happens at every level and scale of the economy for purchases of much larger value than your daily Starbucks latte. This is where Bitcoin will begin to really shine sustainably at scale as a medium of exchange, not Joe buying his coffee every day. SWIFT processes around $5 trillion of payments each day, about $1.25 quadrillion a year. One need look no further than numerous Russian banks being cut off from the SWIFT system to see the potential risks in relying on it in order to settle international payments. This follows a curved distribution, where 5% of the overall payments processed account for 95% of the value, and the vast majority of payments are for much lower sums, the average payments being $400,000 and the median being $5,000 in October 2010. So very large value payments account for the vast majority of value transferred across the network. But that remaining small percent of value is distributed across a large variety of individual actors, making small payments that are still, in the grand scheme, not a small amount of money. This distribution actually shows why SWIFT is ripe for disruption by Bitcoin in that latter category. As I brought up in this article in March, discussing this same topic in the context of explicit sanctions evasion, the key limiting factor of using Bitcoin to process conventional payments denominated in fiat currencies is liquidity. I broke down how even if 100% of the mining hash rate in Iran, which is 5% of the network, was completely owned by the government, and they were retaining 100% of the proceeds, they would acquire $700 million worth of Bitcoin a year to pay for imports. That is, in the grand scheme, not really much. Iran imported $38 billion of goods in 2020. $700 million is just a fraction of that. This dynamic changes when you start to consider a country with a thriving fiat market for Bitcoin. The situation with Iran was them considering burning oil in place of being able to export it directly for sale, and using Bitcoin mining to fill that gap. The problem is that it is limited by how much mining hardware they can get their hands on. Consider a country that is not so heavily sanctioned, but potentially at risk of it, that can still export things and has a thriving Bitcoin and fiat market with a volume of about $10 million a day. If people from across the world were willing to pay for exports from that country with Bitcoin, there is a $10 million a day market that could convert that into fiat every day. That's potentially $10 million of money coming into the country every day to pay for exports. I know this is an oversimplified analysis, ignoring changes in market conditions, how that will affect market liquidity, the consistency of demand for Bitcoin, etc. But stick with the simplified analysis just to consider the point. That is about $3.6 billion a year. Now imagine $100 million a day market volume. That's $36 billion a day. That's almost Iran's yearly imports from 2020. Now imagine that last 5% of value processed by SWIFT that makes up 95% of all the individual transactions. Imagine all the different businesses and individuals making international payments that fit inside that bucket of payments. As long as the source country has the liquidity in a fiat Bitcoin market to allow someone making a payment to buy it, and the destination country has enough liquidity for the receiver to sell it, Bitcoin is the perfect vehicle to process that international payment with minimal slippage or fees and settle it within the span of a few blocks. Add the Lightning Network into the picture, and that can be settled within seconds. The more speculative liquidity surrounding Bitcoin, the more value can be processed in such a system between different jurisdictions to facilitate international commerce. You don't even need to be a sanctioned country or entity to see the value in this. Settlement can be literally instant. SWIFT can take days, even weeks sometimes, depending on where money is moving between and the checks that SWIFT runs over a payment. Bitcoin removes that delay and removes the potential for a third party to stop the payment from occurring. It boils things down to only the two points of exchange between fiat and Bitcoin in the respective jurisdictions, in terms of counterparty risk the two transactors are exposed to. Even that, however, can be removed by simply custodying and controlling the Bitcoin yourself directly. The only risk at that point is then the volatility of Bitcoin itself. This too can be dealt with. At the simplest level, a small portion of the Bitcoin a company is holding can be deposited to an exchange with futures products, and with leverage can be used to short the Bitcoin price in order to hedge against the volatility. 10x leverage means you only need to put 10% of your Bitcoin on such a platform to hedge that exposure. If the Bitcoin price goes up and your short is liquidated, the price appreciation of Bitcoin will make up for that and leave you with the same amount of fiat value. If it goes down in value, then the money you make on the short position will make up for the depreciating value of Bitcoin, and you will still have the same amount of fiat value. Discrete log contracts, or DLCs, even offer the possibility to hedge against the price volatility of Bitcoin natively on the network itself through a smart contract. This allows you to directly control the Bitcoin, have contracts settle right back into your control in self-custody when it closes, and even allows for the use of multiple price oracles so that trust is not placed in a single one to honestly report the price of Bitcoin. People act like Bitcoin has to hit the point of hyper-Bitcoinization in order to become a major backbone of processing payments in the world, or to become a system as important to the economy as SWIFT. It does not. Market volume of a certain level means that that amount of Bitcoin is being actively bought and sold. That means demand is there to regularly process purchases and sales of Bitcoin within that value range during whatever time period you are analyzing. The same goes for futures markets. Whatever volume is present there is available for people who want to custody the Bitcoin themselves instead of being exposed to counterparty risk to hedge against that volatility and not have their businesses ruined if the price of Bitcoin suddenly crashes down to a massive degree. Bitcoiners have become so focused on the notion of grassroots adoption, which is not itself a bad thing, as that is absolutely a necessary aspect of Bitcoin adoption to truly become an actual money. But they have begun losing sight of the other side of that coin. Large players, large value settlement. Bitcoin is ripe for a massive disruption of systems like SWIFT, and at the rate the world is becoming both politically and economically unstable, I think that time is going to come sooner rather than later. I think that Bitcoin and Lightning will start seeing widespread adoption by businesses as an alternative to SWIFT and other settlement systems before it sees widespread adoption as a means of consumer payment. It's simply easier to convince a few thousand businesses of the value add and utility and get the work done to integrate there than it is to convince hundreds of millions of people of the value add and get the work done to integrate it there. It would also probably make the job of the latter easier if the former was accomplished first, as most people tend to follow in the footsteps of things that seem credible. What could add more credibility in the minds of your average person than constantly hearing how Bitcoin is being used to settle international business payments and dragging business away from conventional settlement systems? This is a guest post by Shinobi. Opinions expressed are entirely their own and do not necessarily reflect those of BTC Incorporated or Bitcoin Magazine. All right, so that wraps up the piece. Bitcoin will replace SWIFT before it replaces Visa by Shinobi. And let's hit our sponsor really quick. And I want to talk about this because this is something that I feel like I mention a lot, but I think this is just a really great framing of exactly what is meant when I say it's going to make the dollar better before it replaces the dollar. It's going to make fiat transfer better. So let's hit our sponsor really fast, and we will jump back in on a guy's take on this piece. You might ask yourself why I am cheerful that all of my bills came in today. Because I have the Fold card. The Fold card is my main banking, and all of my bills go through it now, and I get sats back on literally everything. And with the price as low as it is right now, it is prime time for getting sats back, baby. I saved up a couple extra spins, I got my extra sats in the metaverse and my extra spins, and man, it paid off today, and I'm very, very happy about it. My healthcare came in, the car payment, we paid for the first half of an Airbnb, got some food expenses, a lot of stuff came out today, but I got sats back on every single bit of it. And I even got like 7% back on some gift cards that I used because I went ahead and just did those expenses today too because I really just wanted to rack up a few hundred thousand sats in one day and it feels really good. Fold is a one-stop shop for making fiat give you sats all the time. You know, fiat sucks so much to have to use. I cannot bring myself to understand how someone uses fiat without getting paid Bitcoin for it. You should get paid Bitcoin to use fiat. Use the Fold card. And it's only $10 a month, and you guys get a 20% discount. Code Bitcoin Audible. Check them out. Check them out just for their faucet. They will give you free sats every day. Come on. Just open the app and check it out. Go to guyswan.com/fold. All right. So this article is something, like I said, is something that I feel like I've talked about a lot, but I thought Shinobi did such a good job of just kind of, I mean, directly attacking the idea and talking about kind of the main points that are the issues surrounding the problem, or surrounding the market, is probably the better way to put it, and that, you know, ultimately one of the challenges of this is liquidity. It's funny how much of what Bitcoin can do and how much of what makes it a good money is based on its liquidity. And that's, there's a, I think, I don't know which economist or which thing that we've read that kind of hit this point really hard and it stuck with me, but I can't remember exactly where we stumbled upon it. But it's something we've talked about on the show, is that essentially what makes a money, what makes it the best medium of exchange and ultimately the best unit of account is that it is the most liquid good. Like, liquidity is the measure of its ability to move value. And Shinobi hits that specifically in this piece, is that the liquidity on either end in an international trade, especially when you're talking about moving fiat, is ultimately what denotes or what limits what a country or business or large corporation is able to move. And this is why one of those things, like this is why the store of value, medium of exchange, unit of account kind of maturation path, I think, is so critical, because you have to have liquidity before a medium of exchange makes sense. It almost necessarily has to have some market for some other reason, whether it be speculation or store of value or the confidence that it will be a better medium of exchange in the future. Somehow it has to become an incredibly liquid asset in order for the transfer to actually make sense. And this is also, I think it was in Guy's take 54, maybe, I don't know, it's the one on Lightning and the web. And one of the things that I harp on in a few different episodes, kind of around that zone, was that I think the first thing that Bitcoin is going to do internationally, and this is something that I think Strike has the right framing on, like as far as what Bitcoin can do, like his Jack Mallers explanation of the peanuts and the, what was it, the potato chips or something, I thought was a really great analogy. But I think there might be an element of timing where he is rushing to Visa while missing the low-hanging fruit that Shinobi is talking about here, is how unbelievably valuable it is to have a radically neutral international settlement system explicitly in an environment that is so biased, so permissioned and controlled by powers that are adversarial, that are explicitly at each other's throats. The political environment is splintering into 100 different pieces. It's falling apart all over the place. And the same thing with the economic and financial environment. It's just an absolute shit show. the level and degrees of counterparty risks now and the essentially the cost of that risk is constantly increasing. Russia being the prime example that Shinobi brings up in this piece, but just that, like, holding assets in that financial system, in an international banking system that's dominated by, that is literally owned by U.S. entities, your money just vanishes. It just disappears. And the number of countries that are finding themselves in this position, while the U.S. is increasingly just kind of wantonly using the international payments and settlement and financial systems as weapons to attack countries. It's hard to explain how valuable something like Bitcoin could be in that environment. And this is exactly the environment, like, where everything has been heading for a decade or longer. Like, it's clear that we were headed here because there was no other escape. And not only was, I mean, even if you aggressively tried to turn things around, but we did all the exact opposite. We accelerated everything. We took all of the bad policies and all the bad courses of actions and all the bad reactions to international events, and we just made them worse. We just doubled down on everything that put us in the situation, and there was no political motivation to turn it around. So, of course, it wasn't going to happen. Of course, we were going to end up here. But I think the prime value case right now in this environment is attacking exactly that group that Shinobi is talking about. Is the businesses, the international payments, the financial services, like all of these things. Imagine, you know, fintech is such an interesting new player because fintech has been able to provide a lot of services and convenience to users that makes the front-facing side of finance and money appear to be fresh and updated, but all of the back end is still a nightmare, and all of the back end is still permissioned. Imagine if fintech can kind of divorce, can kind of separate away from a lot of the reliance on the banking infrastructure, and they can end up being front ends on their own international settlement system that is entirely open source and, again, radically neutral, that has no specific jurisdiction participating as counterparty risk. And they essentially can start adding services and contracting and, like, these sorts of things built into this code, like, built into these actual systems. Like he talks about in this article is the DLCs, the ability to actually do non-custodial contracts on the fluctuating dollar price of Bitcoin by using oracles. And the DLC stuff is coming out, is making a lot of headway. And we also, I just saw today, I think it was on, maybe it was like No Bullshit Bitcoin or something, I'm not sure, but there was a terminal, it was like a CLI thing showing the issuance of assets on Taro, of issuing of a stablecoin. And Taro is able to use, you're able to issue like a dollar stablecoin and then actually send it over the Lightning Network. And then I also just read about a, on Liquid, actually, a automated market maker. Essentially a decentralized way. I didn't really dig into the actual explicit, the specific details of the thing, but the gist of it was that it was essentially a way to create a an open and kind of decentralized or non-custodial sort of marketplace for liquidity between assets, again, like the Canadian dollar asset and the U.S. dollar asset built on top of the Liquid network. And now Fedimint is already is dropped. Like, all this stuff has happened in, like, the last couple of weeks. These things are major developments. This is why I love the freaking bear markets. Somehow, it just aligns that all of the exciting stuff, that's the projects that get started in the bull market, they start to get released, and you start to get to play with them and see them happen in the bear markets, and you start building a strong foundation with Fedimint happening at the same time, with Taro happening, with movement in Liquid that I actually think could steamroll. I mean, I'm not, you know, Liquid has its ups and downs and hasn't had like a ton of usage, but I don't know. I'm still very intrigued. I continue to be intrigued about what the future of Liquid might be. And Lightning. Lightning is so cool, specifically because the limitations of Lightning right now are easy to mitigate in a business context, but they're still incredibly difficult sometimes to mitigate in a consumer context. Like, if a business is operating like financial side or business side, it's not a problem to have to pay a slightly higher fee to get something settled in 10 minutes instead of instantly. Whereas when you're creating a consumer-facing experience, you just don't want anything to ever hang up. There's never any pending. There's never any like high cost versus low cost. You want that stuff to go away completely and forever. That's why most of those are services, and they end up doing services that, you know, you end up with custodial services that kind of provide the best user experience. And then also, one of the things about Lightning that I think is so fascinating, and also why I think it like kind of marries itself very well to this part of Bitcoin's evolution, is that Lightning is a liquidity network. That is what Lightning channels are. And yes, it is to facilitate payments, but ultimately, what is being built out and the service it is providing is liquidity to people who need payments. And when your fallback on the Lightning Network is multiples better and less trusted than the best option we have in regards to SWIFT and international payments today. Essentially, your fallback on Lightning is that the Lightning payment doesn't work and you have to do on-chain or an atomic swap or something like that. That's something that can make the international piping, the international rails of money vastly more efficient and far, far more secure. You could essentially have it where your counterparty risk as a receiver or as a sender never leaves your jurisdiction. So you don't have international risk at all. The person on the sender side only has their jurisdictional risk, and the person on the receiver side only has their jurisdictional risk. So there's not even really like an international exchange happening. There, it's just moving to a system to Bitcoin to facilitate the jurisdictional shift, because Bitcoin doesn't have international movement. Bitcoin just is. It's the same thing no matter where you are. It doesn't even know borders exist. So in one sense, it's kind of like, yes, you could say that it's facilitating an international payment from, you know, let's say the payments from Japan to the United States or something, or something that's more difficult, from Iran to the United States, right? Like, you can say that it's traveling from there, but Bitcoin exists in both places at once. It's just teleporting from a person who has keys, who owns their keys and can sell it in the U.S. jurisdiction, or from the Iranian jurisdiction to the U.S. jurisdiction. It doesn't actually travel from Iran to the U.S. It simply teleports possession from an Iranian to a U.S. citizen. But that characteristic is crucial. It is wildly valuable in this current environment in particular. And this is why I say that Bitcoin is going to make fiat work better before it replaces fiat. Because that is a massive market for, I mean, he says only 5%, right? It's 95% of the transactions, but 5% of the value that transfers. 5% of what, 1.2 something quadrillion dollars? That's a lot. That's a lot of freaking value. And like I say, the analogy that I use in the guy's take that I referenced earlier was that when the web came along, when packet switching and digital infrastructure started to replace the back end, that's where it started. It was at the infrastructure level. It was before the user really came into the system in a flood. You know, it really wasn't until the mobile revolution that everyone became connected to the internet in, like, the modern society that we have. And connectivity just became ubiquitous and everywhere, and the idea of not having signal was just crazy. But long before that, more than a decade before that even began, what we had is the analog system improved drastically, but we didn't necessarily see or know why. The example I gave is that, you know, your grandmother probably still has that corded phone hanging in their kitchen. And when they were using that phone, there was once a day at the very beginning of the 1990s, late 1980s, in which if you called out of your state, you paid huge fees. You had to count the seconds that you were on that phone because you were paying exorbitant fees to do that. And the further away you called, the worse the connection was. There was literally like a hiss. There's an analog degradation because you're sending the signal over such long distances and it has to be reamplified and, you know, repushed out onto the network. And but suddenly one day, those you could get a service that didn't have long distance fees, and then one day it was international, and increasingly the quality of the connection was better and better, but you're still using the same phone. What happened? The back end switched to digital. You would call to a local hub, which would turn your analog connection into a digital connection, and then it would send digital communications over the internet infrastructure, blast it all the way across the country. There's no loss. There's error correction for any tiny loss that does happen, so it's a perfectly clean connection when it shows up at the other end. It transfers back into analog at the other node, at the other local node, and goes into the corded phone of your grandmother's friend that she's calling. That, I think, is what's going to happen with Bitcoin, especially when in the middle of that connection, you have political jurisdictions that are attacking each other, that are at financial war with each other, that are putting up financial walls and using literally financial weapons of war to attack and destroy each other's economies. I don't want to say it's us because we don't know, but somebody just blew up an energy pipeline, fully accepting and fully okay with letting entire countries go through an absolute crisis. I mean, there's no telling how many people will be killed because of this, to fight a war about money, about control of resources. And this isn't something new. This has been escalating for a very, very long time. And the EU is falling apart. Our energy infrastructure has been misallocated across the board. It's going to be a disaster for a long time. This decade is not going to be fun. What could be more valuable than a way to trade that just says, I don't want to deal with all of this shit. I don't want to be a part of their political game. I don't want to have to deal with their political walls. I don't have to deal with their sanctions, with their capital controls, because I need to eat. I need to turn the lights on. I need to heat my house. It's freezing outside. I need trade that is not susceptible, that is not subject to the insane authoritarianism of our corrupt, incompetent political systems, that they no longer will be the deciding factor of whether or not I get to eat. Being able to keep our supply chains alive and do some semblance of trade and movement of resources in an politically adversarial environment is critical, and there is no more important tool in that task than a neutral money that cannot be censored and cannot be shut down, that is totally and completely global. And I think Shinobi is right. That is going to be realized and needed much sooner than later. So that is what I got. I wanted to actually hit a couple of quotes, but I gotta go feed Rad, and it's time for sleep. So I just want to thank our sponsors, Swan Bitcoin, the best onboarding experience, and of course hosting. I'm so excited about the Pacific Bitcoin Conference. Do not forget 20% discount with code GUYS. CoinKite and the cold card to keep your shit safe. Keep your keys safe on a cold card. And lastly, Fold for giving me sats back on everything in life. I got a lot of sats back today. It was a great spinning day. So with that, don't forget discounts and links in the show notes, and I will be back with another episode tomorrow. And until then, everybody, take it easy, guys. The curious task of economics is to demonstrate to men how little they really know about what they imagine they can design. Friedrich Hayek.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.